Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Fancy a cold lager all the way from the Rocky Mountains? Or an IPA from the sunny shores of California? Or a delicious creamy stout from your local craft breweries? With over 800 beers to choose from, craftbeersdelivered.com is home to the best craft beer from around the globe. We're one of Ireland's largest craft beer delivery services, run by our in-house beer specialists. From your favorite IPAs, stouts, lagers, and more, to some very special limited edition brews, we have a brew for the whole crew. craftbeersdelivered.com offers quick, hassle-free delivery straight to your door. Order online today at craftbeersdelivered.com. Always drink responsibly.
Hello, you're listening to the Beer Ladies podcast with me, Katie, and my friends. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon, this thing called Blue Sky, TikTok. Our handle there is at Beer Ladies Pod. And if you're on Facebook, it's at Beer Ladies Podcast. If you'd like to support the show, you can find our merch store link in any of our bios or in the show notes for the episode. And also on our website, which is beerladiespodcast.com. If you'd like to sponsor an episode, please email us at beerladiespodcast@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hello and welcome back to the Beer Ladies podcast. I'm Lisa. I am your host this evening, and I'm joined by my co-host, Christina, who's feeling a little under the weather, but she is waving, I promise you. Christina, do you want to say a quick hello in your special sultry voice tonight?
Hello, friends. You'll have to bear with me. I have the flu, so I am here in body, and I will do my best, so bear with me.
And she is here in spirit as well, and that's important because this is our annual spooky season crossover episode. Yay! And we are really excited to welcome Joe from the Ghost Trail. Joe, welcome. Say hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Oh, we are thrilled to have you. And we'll let Joe talk a little bit more about her exciting YouTube channel and some of her travels and adventures in kind of in Ghostland. But before we do that, I know everyone's kind of either under the weather or not really drinking much today, but we're going to do our traditional. So what are you drinking? So Joe, I think we'll start with you. I think you've got a...
I'm probably the worst person to be on a beer because I don't actually drink beer. I'm sorry.
Oh, we're broad church. We're broad church. Yeah.
But I'm drinking a coffee because it's a bit dark outside and I wanted to feel cozy and spooky. And, you know, a coffee always helps with that, I find.
Oh, here. And again, Christina, I know, again, you're trying to get back into the arena of the well. So what have you got?
I have a giant tea in my skeleton spooky mug on theme today. And I also have my future ghost t-shirt on. So that's what I'm bringing to the table.
Well, and you've got your ghost tattoos. For folks who've not met Christina in person, she has some very on point ghost tattoos. So always good to see that. And I have a sort of on theme beer, or almost beer. I have the Wicklow Wolf Moonlight non-alcoholic hoppy ale. So this can both fit for kind of a sort of a werewolfy kind of theme, but also for sober October for anyone who's doing that. So so we are all kind of on theme. So that is what we're drinking. But again, we're excited because it's spooky season. And for anyone who knows us and is a regular listener, you know, we get a little weird around sort of two times of year, spooky season, Halloween and Eurovision. So, you know, we tend to do something a little bit different, a little bit extra for both of those things. But again, we are so thrilled to have Joe on. So Joe, I wonder if you could give yourself sort of your best introduction and then tell us a little bit about how you got started with the Ghost Trail.
Well, it's actually been 4 years this Halloween that I originally started with a friend, but I'm going solo these days.
Right.
But it came about, a friend and I were out having a coffee. Again, coffee all the time.
As these things happen, yeah.
Yep. And we were chatting about an old 90s TV show called Strange But True. I don't know if you remember it.
I remember that. Yes, I spent a lot of time in student days watching that London. Yeah.
It was a great show. It was Michael Aspel used to present it, and it would be very much storytelling based. So people would tell their experiences, there'd be reenactments, they'd discuss what happened. I mean, later on you've got The Most Haunted and all that, and where it's more like investigations and gadgets and things. And, you know, I really missed that storytelling side of the ghost genre.
Yeah.
And we were like, let's do something for Halloween. And we were like, let's do 6 episodes just for fun. And we released it all on Halloween. And we did it, and it went really well, and we had a lot of fun. And then for the next 3 years, we did it together. Caspian, who I was doing it with, left at the start of the year to do some other things, but I've carried on. And here I am today, still searching for those ghosts.
it's brilliant. And for anyone who hasn't watched, obviously just you can go, you know, search on YouTube for the Ghost Trail series. And I think that is kind of what I think makes it really special is, you know, you don't have the jump scares and the, you know, the weird lighting that you get in, you know, like your most haunted kind of things. Like you're really, you know, you're telling the story and you're going to all kinds of interesting places and just really kind of letting them kind of speak for themselves, I think, as well in some places.
I don't like to make judgment on whether ghosts are real or ghosts are not. I mean, I know what I think, but I'm fascinated, and I think most people enjoy a good story whether they believe or not. So I like to tell the stories. I go to as many of the places that I'm talking about that I can, and I also do love a little bit of abandoned exploring because that's always a little bit spooky and creepy.
It's great. And I think at the moment, are you doing 2 a week as we lead up to Halloween? It seems like you either have a lot of stuff you've shot already or you're really, really busy. So it could be all of the above.
It's a bit of both, I think. Yes, I'm doing 2 a week for October, Wednesdays and Sundays. A lot of it I knew I was going to do 2 a week. So for the past few months, I've been building up some episodes and been quite busy. And I'm now all up to date, so I'm calming down a little bit now and just going to enjoy October.
Oh, that's brilliant. And I think, you know, again, for those who haven't seen it, you go to all kinds of interesting places all over the UK, but you've also done some interesting stuff here in Ireland. So I know a lot of our listeners will, you know, their ears will be perking up since we do have a lot of people who do listen here. But I wonder if you could tell us about that recent Ireland trip and kind of how that came to be and what some of the maybe surprises were of that as well.
Yeah, well, so I mentioned I do some abandoned exploring sometimes, and I have two friends, Gaz and Jaden. They're father and son actually, and they're also photographers, filmmakers. And we realized that we shared this hobby. And so we've become a little bit of a trio. And last year we went to Scotland and we did a road trip and we loved it. And this year we were like, let's go to Ireland. So we got the ferry from Holyhead over to Dublin. And then we drove about an hour south. And yeah, we spent a week working our way around. We started off at Ballinasloe Woods. And then we went west and then we kind of headed north and we did a big loop up through like Northern Ireland. We were in Belfast and we were camping the whole time. So, yeah, it was really good fun. We had really mixed weather. Some days were really wet and miserable and other days were lovely. And we did a real mixture of places, some supposedly very haunted locations. And we ended up at the Guinness Storehouse before we got there.
And it just happens. Yeah,
I think that was Gaz's highlight. It was a wonderful trip, and I just loved every minute of it, to be honest.
Oh, it's brilliant. I feel like you have to camp. I mean, I've just come back from Kilkenny. I was saying beforehand, and it's, you know, the hotel prices in Ireland are ridiculous compared to many, many, many other places. So camping—that's the wise way to do it. I think it's so expensive otherwise. And Christina, again, I know you're nodding along, but like we had at some point planned to do a whole like proper like Loftus Hall, you know, overnight kind of thing, and we've never managed to make it happen. And then I guess it got sold.
I had tickets to go to a Loftus Hall ghost hunting experience, and I was so excited. And then COVID made it not That's happen. Right. And then it's been sold, so I haven't been able to go, and I'm devastated. But I have found some paranormal groups here that do like things open to the public, so I am watching with bated breath to be able to jump in on one of these. I love this stuff. I think it's so cool.
It's good. I can't remember. Did you guys drive past Loftus Hall? I want to say I saw it maybe in the background somewhere, but
no, I don't think we did. We were in such remote locations for most of the time, okay. To be honest. Yeah. I have actually done an episode on Loftus Hall.
Okay,
probably about 3 years ago. So
okay,
much of the history and ghost stories of it because I do so many places, but I do remember finding it really fascinating and thinking it would be a great place to visit. But we did visit a place called Can Do House. Have you heard of it?
I don't think I know that one, no.
No, it's actually in Northern Ireland. It was used as a location for a Ridley Scott movie, actually.
Oh, okay.
Morgan, a sci-fi movie. And it's this gorgeous, well, it's an abandoned mansion, basically, but it's just there for anyone to kind of go up and see. And you can, it's a bit dangerous, I think, inside, but you can just look through it. It's all open. And it's supposedly the most haunted house in Northern Ireland. So that was super fun to go and walk around. And it was once this decadent summer house. And then it got left and kind of donated to the hospital. I don't know, it was a charity or something. Mm. It was used hospital, I think, until the 80s, and now it's a derelict abandoned mansion. So that was definitely a highlight of my trip.
Oh, that's amazing. I want to say, actually, now that you said it, I think I did hear about it on maybe on the Real Life Ghost Stories podcast. I think she had someone had written in about an experience they had there, I want to say.
I think quite a few people have. When I was researching it, I think it's such an iconic building in the area that a lot of people go there for their wedding photos to have it. I know, a bit of a strange thing, but from what I read, a lot of people do that. And on a few occasions, people have had photos come back and there have been like mysterious faces in the window looking out at them. And someone had a little Victorian boy in a photo, like standing by them that wasn't there on the day. And it definitely has an atmosphere. I mean, I didn't see anything while I was there, but there is definitely a kind of it's spookiness, I suppose. It's quite a gothic looking building. And there's something going on, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh, that's wonderful. Oh, very exciting. Well, I wonder too if you could tell us a little bit about, I know you've got kind of some stories and things to share of sort of either haunted inns or haunted pubs, what you've come across in your travels so far. I think we're always on the lookout for more here. And I've been told, I've been given some tips of a couple places in my neighborhood that I'm told have a spook or two, although I've not seen anything happen myself, but you never know. So what have you come across in your adventuring?
Well, I suppose the most famous haunted inn I've stayed at is the Mermaid Inn, which is in Rye in East Sussex. Rye is an ancient sink port. It's really historic. It's got all cobbled streets. And the Mermaid Inn was built in, I think, 1420, but the basement stayed back to the 1100s. But it was a bit of a hub for smugglers back in the day.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it's where they'd all gather. There's apparently a tunnel that runs from the Mermaid Inn to another pub, I think, another like ancient inn. And it's just rife with history. And of course, with that comes ghost stories. And I've got a list because there's so many ghosts. I was like, I won't remember them all. But I'm going to run through the list.
Oh, lovely. We love a ghost list. Yeah.
If you go there for a drink or decide to stay. So if you stay in room one, there is a woman clad in grey who likes to sit by the fireplace.
Ooh.
Yes. In room 19, we've got a man who wears splendid attire.
Oh, good for him.
I know. And he likes to make himself known to guests, apparently. He likes people to see that he's there and he looks very nice and fancy in his clothing. We've got another man in room 10, and he likes to walk through the bathroom wall into the main chamber, and he's been seen a load of times. And then this is my favourite one. In room 16, there are 16th century jewellers who reenact their sword play in the middle of the night. So people staying in the room have woken up to like this sword fight going on at the end of their bed. I love that one.
Oh, that's excellent.
I know. And then next door in room 17, there is the wife of a notorious smuggler who is called George Grey. His wife haunts the rocking chair, and people often wake up in the night and the rocking chair's going back and forth and the air's really cold. And yeah, so there's all these ghosts who are hanging around. I stayed there for the night. Nothing happened, because nothing ever happens when you're looking for it, does it?
Right.
But it's such a brilliant place. It's very quirky. All the floors are wonky. It's just one of my favorite places. And I keep going back to Rye. I feel a bit drawn to it. And always pop into the Mermaid Inn for a drink because it's lovely.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Yeah, I've never made it over to that one. I want to say I've been to, I know like the old Mitre is meant to have a ghost somewhere. So like all your London ones I've been to, I think. But yeah, I love it when you've still got those, like you said, the wonky floors and where you just feel an atmosphere and, you know, it properly feels old. Yeah. Walls.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I really enjoyed that one. I feel like I have seen a ghost, but it wasn't in a pub, but I can share the story with you.
It doesn't matter where we welcome all sorts. So,
well, back in the day, I used to do a lot of small scale theatre touring. And on this particular tour, we were up in Scotland and it was a three-hander. So there were just three of us, me, another guy and another girl. And our boss had put us up in this house on the outskirts of Edinburgh. And I vividly remember going to it for the first time. It was in the middle of nowhere. It was a quiet country lane. And there were these big iron gates that we had to open up.
Oh, wow.
And we drove up this like windy hill, and this big Gothic mansion was sat on the top of this hill. And I remember thinking, oh my God, we're staying here. We got out of the car. We were a little bit like, gosh, look at this place. And this woman kind of welcomed us, and she was probably in her 50s, and she explained to us that the house had belonged to her mother, and when her mother passed, she had made it into apartments that she rented out. And so we had two of these apartments, me and the girl in one, and the lad had his own one. And as soon as we walked into this apartment, I was like, I don't think I could stay here.
Right.
I just have this kind of sinking dread, fear. Ooh. Like it's I've only ever had this feeling a couple of times, and this was one of them, and I just felt like I had to get out. And obviously I couldn't. I was there for 2 weeks, and it was the worst 2 weeks ever. I didn't sleep. It was horrendous. And on the first night, I was trying to fall asleep, and I just, you know that feeling when you feel like someone's watching you, like staring.
Yeah, so eerie. Yeah.
And I opened my eyes and I saw what looked like an old woman standing at the end of my bed. Ooh. And I know it wasn't sleep paralysis, because I moved and I turned the light on. The switch was behind me.
Yeah.
And this, as soon as I turned the light on, obviously this woman disappeared. But that was it. The rest of the 2 weeks was just awful. I had all the lights on all through the night. I couldn't even have a shower with out Gemma sitting on the toilet waiting. No. So terrified. But at the end of the 2 weeks, the boss rang and she was like, just checking how Scotland was and how did you find the accommodation. And I didn't want to be rude, and I said, oh, it was right. So lovely, thank you so much. She said, oh, I'm so glad you liked it, because I had another tour there last month and they said it was haunted by an old woman.
Oh, no.
Oh my gosh. And then obviously told her the story. And I think it was the mother who wasn't happy that it had been made into apartments and was trying to scare guests off.
But, oh my goodness, mentioned like theatrical types turning up.
I know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I have a whole big collection of books just on haunted theatres, because I mean, again, they attract, you know, all these different emotions, and you know, it's such a great, you know, sort of fertile breeding ground for that kind of thing. And I recently did a sort of semi-secret behind the scenes tour at Carnegie Hall, and I kept wanting to be like, is it haunted? Are there any ghosts? Does anyone have any stories? They wouldn't, you know, they just had a lot of very serious union reps who made sure we kept moving from like space to space. So
I think some places like to play on the whole ghost thing and they use it as a bit of an attraction.
Yeah.
Whereas other places I've been that I've read have been extremely haunted, and you know, people have had experiences all the time, and you go in and say, is it haunted? They're like, nope.
Right.
They don't want to talk about it at all. But
I have a question. Sorry.
You can do it. I believe in you.
Yes. So you've gone on So loads of places and seen lots of stuff. Have you ever truly been like scared or felt scared? Like even if you don't see anything, like you talked a little bit about that feeling, that ominous feeling. Have you had that like in other places or worse? Or was that kind of it? Like that was the worst one? Or have you ever experienced that?
I would say that's probably one of the only times I've had that, like it was like terror. Like I was like, I can't, I have to get out. I did have a weird experience in a hotel I was staying at, and it was actually fairly recently, and it's called Dunsley Hall. It's in Stourbridge in the Midlands. And I'd done an episode on it. It was once a gorgeous manor house, and it's now a hotel. And I'd done an episode on it because all sorts of strange things have happened there in the past. There was a murder and someone else supposedly committed suicide, which is a bit dark and I won't go into it now. But apparently one of the common things that happens to people is that they'll lock their room at night and then in the morning the key is on the other side of the door and they can't get out, so
Oh
they're locked.
no.
So I'd stayed there a few times and I'd always been in the same room, and I'd booked again because it's such a beautiful place, and they'd put me in a different room, and I was like, oh, this is strange, a different room. And I had a lovely night, and I went to leave in the morning and I couldn't get out.
Oh
Yeah, and it wasn't my key because I had my key, but my key wasn't working. And I
no. Oh gosh.
really panicked and I was like, oh my gosh. And I was like, what do I do? And basically, it's hard to explain, but you know, you've got a door and the little like metal catch thing that goes into the bit of the wall that keeps the door shut.
Yeah.
When I was moving the handle, that wasn't moving back. It had broken, the spring had broken somehow on its own in
Oh.
the night and had trapped me in.
Oh
So
gosh.
for about 20 minutes, I'm panicking, and eventually I managed to get like my little finger in and hook it out. But that was very strange, and I don't know whether it was supernatural or just a faulty door, but it worked fine when I went in the evening, and in the morning the spring had broken inside the door mechanism. So that was
Oh
quite neat.
gosh. Yeah, that's creepy no matter what. Yeah, I mean, like you say,
Yeah.
either way, you're like, ugh.
And the
Oh
other
my
time I
gosh.
felt a little bit scared was when I was exploring an abandoned house. Again, it was a massive house. It had been a manor house. And I was in the basement, which is always creepy anyway. And I was with a friend, and she was like, this basement was huge and it was had lots of corridors and little rooms, you know, it kind of spread across the whole size of the house. And she was ahead of me, a room ahead, and I suddenly heard her scream my name out. And she thought I'd pulled her rucksack from behind because she'd
Oh.
fallen, like been pulled backwards, but I wasn't anywhere near her. And when we looked back at the footage, just before she screams my name out and you see her go like this, there's a white shadow that goes past her like this.
Oh, wow.
So that was quite creepy. And but I didn't have that terror that I had in the other house, but I was a bit
Right.
on edge. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that reminds me of that. I don't know if you remember that, Ghosts on the Underground documentary from kind of the early 2000s. It's still on YouTube. It has amazing music. It's narrated by Paul McGann. It's just like, it's the best. But I rewatch it several times a year. But there is one really good story like that where the like they're closing the tube down at the end of the night, and the one guy working in the station is trying to figure out, oh, is there a little girl on the platform or a woman? I don't remember which it is. And he goes to talk to someone, and the guy on the security camera is like, what are you doing? There's no one there. But someone sees something, the other doesn't, and it's all just it's just a great story and one of those very sort of atmospheric
Especially, I think there's something
yeah.
about being underground, like
Yeah.
basements, cellars, tunnels. I've explored a lot of World War II tunnels, and
Yeah.
there's something about just being underground that I love because of that little bit of anxiety that you
Oh
get as you're
yeah.
through. But yeah, the underground's an interesting place. Lots of weird stories from the
Yeah,
underground.
oh, absolutely. That's one of my other like big collecting, nerdery things is any kind of haunted underground thing. I've got reams of books on them, and they get
Yeah.
repetitive after a while, but that's okay. It's sort of comforting to know that they all have kind of the same, the same stories in them. But I do like, that's the other thing I find appealing is how they kind of change over time and kind of what the different almost like spooky trends are, because I do feel like you get some things that we just don't have anymore, and then other times you get other kinds of stories. So I wonder if you see any of that kind of thing when you, like, I love the ones where you have the some of your your viewers kind of true stories that they send in. Do you have kind of seasonal themes, or does it just kind of depend on what you get? I'm just curious how those kind of have changed and evolved over the time you've been doing them.
I don't know. I feel like I've had a real mixture of stories and experiences come through to me, and I don't like theme them up really. I just like to have variety in each episode. So I usually do like three viewers' true stories per episode, if that's what the episode's about. And I try and do kind of varied ones.
Yeah.
I've had a few haunted pubs, a lot of haunted houses, but also some like really unusual ones that, you know, you're like, gosh, this is just such an amazing story, and you can't write this stuff, which just, I'm just like, it's just amazing that you've experienced this. I'm really interested in time slips. I find them fascinating and terrifying at the same time. So I always love to receive a story that's kind of time slip related. Yeah, I don't know. I guess with like stories changing and evolving, it might be a bit to do with word of mouth. You know how stories are passed down to generations, like urban legends and things. They're bound to change over the years from each telling of them. So yeah, but I just find it fascinating, all aspects of the unknown.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I always think, I know you've done some, but I always love it. Like all the Bluebell Hill stories, like how you have a lot of consistency in the stories, but then there are little bits and pieces that change, like you say, just as with the telling or over time or as new things kind of happen or get added. And I love that kind of, I don't know, like accretion of, you know, sort of lore, if you like.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And it's interesting that there's certain places I've covered, like I recently covered a place called Chanctonbury Hill, and there are just, it's basically a ring of trees on the top of a hill, and there are just so many stories associated with this one place.
Yeah.
And they're all so different and bizarre and peculiar, and UFO stories come into it, and there's just so much in this one place. Like you say with Bluebell Hill, like you've got the main hitchhiker bride,
right?
But you've got so many other stories and elements that then come in, and you're like, what is it that kind of, why do stories seem to all congregate around one certain place? Like so many different stories. That's quite interesting, I think.
Yeah. And I like that, like that Chanctonbury too has been this kind of inspiration for like, you know, fiction and music and all these other things. I think of like the stuff Justin Hopper has done about it, this fascinating stuff, this kind of spoken word kind of thing. But I love that, you know, taking that kind of drawing on the folklore and creating something kind of new out of it as well. It
absolutely
adds to it. I love all that, and I feel like we're in an amazing time for that kind of thing. People are doing so much like new creative work based on some of these kind of older stories, kind of the, and there's such a kind of movement, if you like, at the moment of like sort of either folklore zines or again like new books coming out, and we're just really lucky to be kind of having all this stuff accessible at the moment. And I think, you know, you're obviously doing something that's kind of a part of that, is getting some of these stories in front of people, and that's I get very excited about that. So
I suppose it is exciting. I think it's just people naturally quite interested in what can't be explained, I think, because you want to try and find answers, you want to try and explain it, and sometimes you just can't. But I think that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, and then I think there's also sometimes it's fun to not have an explanation for some of these things. You know, you have the mystery, and kind of keeps you coming back for more and looking at it from another angle, and that's always exciting too. But yeah. So what have you got coming up? What's in the pipeline? What are some of the things you want to sort of say, ooh, these are coming up for Halloween, or you know, kind of around that time?
Well, I filmed my Halloween special in Wales. I spent a week staying in a little cottage, it's a Victorian farmhouse, and it's on the beach in Penbrin, which is on the west coast of Wales. And I spent a week just kind of exploring Wales, telling local ghost stories, visiting castle ruins. And so that's going to be my Halloween special.
Wonderful.
But I've got all sorts of things coming up. I've got Bramber Castle, which is a ruin as well, but has some very interesting stories attached to it. I've recently explored a secret World War II base that's underground, and I had to climb through a tiny little rabbit hole to get in it.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, what else I've got? I've got some more true stories sent in from viewers coming out next week. I've also done, actually, associated with Ireland, Hi Brazil.
Oh, that'll be fascinating.
Ooh, yes.
Wonderful.
Because I've been tracing my family tree and all my ancestors are Irish and their surname is Brazil or Brazil.
Oh, I'm not sure how right. to pronounce it.
Which got me onto this mythical island of High Brazil. And I found it so fascinating. And so I've done an episode on that one as well.
Oh, that'll be great. And that again, something where you've got something that's inspired all kinds of works of other folklore, works of fiction, films, like all sorts. That's
yeah.
And that might be one too, that it needs to kind of come back into fashion. I feel like, that's a much better story than like Atlantis and stuff like that. It's a
yeah. I mean, it's like the Atlantis of Ireland, I think I called it, because I just find I can't believe I just didn't know about this mythical island off the coast of Ireland before.
Yeah,
so, like through tracing my family tree, and then I started talking to a historian. He was really into Irish history.
Yeah.
And he was so excited when I said that my ancestors had this surname. And he's like, oh, because of the mythical island. And I was like, mythical island? Am I a fairy?
Like, go on.
Yeah. So I did that and I loved researching that one. That one's, that will be coming out soon as well in October.
Oh, that's fantastic. And maybe to sort of flip that question a little bit, are there places in Ireland, for those of us who do live here, where you're like, if you haven't been, you've got to go to these spooky places? Because I feel like we have not done enough. At least I have not done enough. I know, Christina, you're ahead of me, but enough spooky place, exploring. So what are your kind of...
There's never enough.
Top tips. True.
Well, we went to the Dark Hedges. Have you been there?
I've been near it, but they had all the Game of Thrones tours going on, so...
Oh, yeah. we went there. I mean, it was quite touristy, but we were close, and I was like, it is a place
to see
if you're in Ireland, and it was beautiful, and there are some spooky stories associated with that. It's haunted by the ghost of a lady who walks down the avenue of trees and then vanishes, so that was lovely. I loved the Ballinasloe Woods. No stories really associated with those woods, but they're just enchanting. I felt like I was in a fairy tale. They're so beautiful. I feel like you have to visit that if you're close by. And also we did the courthouse in Belfast, which is abandoned. And it's mainly a ruin, to be honest, but you can get down into the cells underground where all the cells were, and that's a network of passages and jails, and it links through a tunnel underground to the actual jail that is now a museum. And the museum, which was formerly the jail, is supposedly extremely haunted. We didn't get time to visit it, but it's on my list for next time, because apparently that's definitely worth a visit. We just visited so many places. It's hard to... I loved it all, and everything was so varied. And I just loved being out in the countryside of Ireland, to be honest. And also the local legends that I read about in certain places we were staying, and everything. It just was a lovely trip, just magical, really.
It's funny, because I'll look on our local maps, and there's meant to be a holy well in the park where I run, and I've gone looking for the holy well and looking for the holy well, and then I finally figured out it is still technically there. They just kind of sort of put rocks and stones over it, to sort of as a landscaping thing more than anything else. But I'm like, it would be nice if there were some kind of little sign or just something to say. I know you're in the middle of, sort of mostly inner city Dublin, but there's something here, you should, kind of get people more aware of, kind of the local folklore and the local legends if they're there. Cause it was only, I think, covered up, I want to say in like the 1980s or something like that, when
Shame it's covered up. Maybe they did it for a health and safety thing.
It could be that as well. And to be fair, it's nice landscaping, but it would also be nice if they had that little sort of nod to its previous incarnation, if you like.
We camped in Northern Ireland. We camped on Loch Ney. Is that how you pronounce it? Loch Ney?
maybe. Not sure. I don't know. Christina, do you know? I don't know.
And I loved staying there because they did have signs everywhere about all these legends of how the lock was created. And apparently a giant had like scooped a big out and threw it into the ocean, which became the Isle of Man, and that's how like this lock was formed. I love all like the local legends, things you might not necessarily learn about until you're in that place.
Yeah, absolutely. I always try to buy the local book, you know, wherever I am, whether it's the local ghosts or the local folklore. And like, since I was just in Kilkenny, so I have the, you know, Kilkenny Legends book that I'm now like, what did I miss while I was here? But then I can read up for next time and then go and look up some of these things. And I did run past a well this morning as I was off running, with looked like it was still pretty well maintained in sort of a 19th century holy well kind of sense. But I was like, oh, that's nice. They've done a good job of, you know, maintaining it, but also making it so that, yeah, that if you're me and you're running and you're clumsy, you're not going to fall into the well, which, you know, I could do, but it was carefully sort of cordoned off in a reasonably aesthetic way. So
that's good. We don't want you falling down a well.
No, I would not be good down a well. No.
No. have you had any ghostly experiences, either of you?
Oh, that's a really good question. I never have. I mean, I'm much more sort of on the skeptic, but would like to believe, but is more skeptical side. But that said, you never know. Like, something could happen. I have had one or two things where I was with other people and they got very excited about stuff happening. One in particular I remember is it was at a rave, which tells you how long ago this was, in an old shoe factory. So again, already kind of the right environment for something, because you're in this old abandoned sort of industrial space, and other people were absolutely certain that a being had come into like one of the other rooms and done something with the atmosphere. But I was the lame person standing outside being like, I don't see anything, what's happening? But everyone else at this party though had taken lots of drugs, so I had not, so maybe that was the problem. I was too straight-laced to see anything. But now I think that's my only sort of almost brush with it. But I did always have, like, my parents were very, very Catholic, very straight-laced, and both insisted that they went on a trip to Canada, I want to say in the 1960s, and they were both terrified by something in a hotel room there. And they both told the story, you know, up until they both died, that, you know, there were lights that were chasing all around the room, and there was no, you know, like traffic outside or anything like that. So, but I was always impressed that even though this was not their jam at all, they both stuck to the story and were like clearly genuinely like frightened by whatever had happened. But I thought it was interesting that it was all just, you know, they said the lights just kept chasing around the room and, you know, the whole night, which is, you know, genuinely creepy when, you know, you have that described to you. So again, it's all secondhand, but you never know. So
you never know. How about you, Christina?
I lived in a haunted house for a while when I was in college with a bunch of other people. And everyone, like most people that lived there, would have had like some story at some point in time. But like, I remember we were like talking about something in the living room and like someone insulted something or another, like something. And the grate when they said it, one of the paintings just blew off the wall and like hit the floor. And we were all like, which I mean, obviously I know physics can happen, but just the timing was just so strange. And then I was upstairs in like one of the top floors, and I remember thinking my roommate was in the bathroom because I could see someone like in white, which I just thought was just her robe or whatever. Yeah. And no, she was at her like boyfriend's house, or she was out or something. And I was certain that I saw her in like my peripheral vision. And so I'm very certain that I saw something, but like, you know, I love to believe in this stuff. I think it's you know, it's fun. It adds a bit of fun to life. So I'm skeptical, but in a open-minded.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think I saw something.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I had a similar story, and I think Christina, I think I've told you before, but again, I have a bunch of very straight-laced, very religious, very kind of everything cousins, but they were all insisted the house they were growing up in you know, whenever any of them would be out, there would be another them that would come home, like go into a room, look like them, they would talk to it, and people would try to go in, and then there would be no one there. And it was always the person wasn't there, but it always, and it would look like a different one of them, just depending on who was the one out. But they all insisted that this went on for years and years and years. And they were, it was that kind of funny thing where I guess it became so normal to them. They weren't weirded out by it. I think you see that in kind of some of the, almost in some of the, like the older kind of family ghost stories where they're like, oh, that's our old ghost, you know, whatever. And they're very blasé about it. And like the person staying over for the night is like, what's happening? And I always think that's such an interesting dynamic where you have the people who are just like, oh, it's just there. We don't really pay attention. And the other people who are kind of, I don't know, panicking about it, if you like. But that, I always found that very, very creepy. And in fact, I wrote it up, and it was my, back in the, oh gosh, I want to say in like the mid-90s, early 90s, that my letter was published in the 14 Times about my cousin's weird, I don't know, doppelgangers or whatever you want to call them. So I was very proud. I was like,
yeah,
it's published like my letter.
Shape-shifting ghost that's just taking on the form. That's really creepy, isn't it?
It's really creepy, yeah. And it was definitely like a creepy house too. Not like it wasn't an old house or anything like that, but it had like a just an atmosphere that was, you know, strange. And again, you know, my cousins were also kind of weird people, so maybe that was just like the family dynamics generated, I don't know, something. But I always just was sort of freaked out by their house and by the, you know, especially when you're a kid and you're being told, oh, if you see, you know, Tommy or whatever, he's not here, but you might think he's here, and you're like, what?
it's a scary story. My auntie used to run pubs actually back in the day. She lives in Greece now, but she used to have multiple weird things happen to her in this one particular pub that she was landlady at, and she lived above the pub, and it never really scared her. But some of the things she used to tell me, I'd be like, I don't know how you're up with that for so long. But she said that once they had all these like knives, kind of fancy knives in the wall in a board on one side of the pub. And she said one day they all flew across the room and landed
with
her head behind the bar. She said like beer mats used to slide off the tables or fly off. And she said an elderly man came in once and he said, they don't want to hurt you, they just don't want you here.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Thanks.
She said she used to be sat on the toilet and it would flush on her.
Oh, and, that's not good.
But the weirdest, a couple of other weird things happened. On her little finger, she always wears a ring that my granddad gave it to my gran. So her dad gave it to her mum. And she always wore this ring. It'd been on her finger for years and years. You know, when you don't even take it off, it's just there. And she was in the pub serving, you know, pulling a pint, and she noticed it had gone.
Oh.
And she was devastated because it sentimental value, you know, it meant a lot to her. And she searched everywhere, couldn't find it in the pub, went up to her apartment, tore it apart, couldn't find it anywhere. Then weeks and weeks went by, and she's back pulling a pint in the pub, and she looks down, and the ring is hanging off her other little finger, but like,
oh, weird.
Like just hanging off there. And she was like, what? And she called her husband because she was like, well, maybe he found it and slipped it on, you know, when she was sleeping.
Sure, or something.
And he was like, no, that wasn't me. I did not find your ring. And then the other weird thing that happened to her was the pub was joined next to an off license, and the off license only had one door in and out, the front door. That was the only way in and out. And the people that owned the off license were going on holiday, and they gave my auntie the keys and said, can you just keep an eye on it while we were away? And she went over to check on it one night, and all the bottles and tins and everything was all hickledy-pickledy balancing on top of one another in front of the door, and she had to knock everything down to get in. So it had been done from the inside. Yeah.
Oh, that's a creepy one. Yeah, that reminds me. I do have one haunted pub that I used to frequent in when we lived in Pennsylvania. It kept changing hands, not because it was haunted, but because it was in what had been a great location in the 18th century when people didn't have cars, but then cars made it sort of harder to get to. So it went through lots of different names. It's really wonderful place, and it had a brewery in it for a while, but they always said, you know, there's a ghost who doesn't like any of the electrics. I mean, you hear this, you know, sort of so often that they'd be up in the office kind of, you know, doing all their kind of books and stuff. But anytime they had anything plugged in, like, you know, everything would lose power and all of these kind of things. But they had a really good beer festival every year, and people would like people would say, you know, I put my drink down and it just vanished, and not in the sort of haha, I put my drink down and it vanished because it was a beer festival, but people would, like, it happened so often that they just kind of got used to it and would sort of give the odd person an extra drink. And so, you know, I'm sure some percentage of those people were like, oh no, my drink, the ghost. But I think there was something peculiar going on, and it was a very
nice pint of beer,
by the way. Yeah, and it was a nice, you know, atmospheric, you know, felt like an old, you know, felt old and spooky again, so that certainly helped. But it was a really fascinating place, and I don't know if it's open again. I hope it is, but you know, it's one of these things that it's been there for such a long time that hopefully it'll just keep reopening in a sort of slightly different guise. But that's my one sort of complaint about, you know, we don't have many pubs in Dublin. We have a couple, but many that have that old, you know, real old feeling. Like, we have a lot of Victorian pubs, but we don't have any that feel super sort of medieval, or, you know, again, a couple, but you can get to some other places. But
definitely come over and visit Rye, because all the pubs date back to like the 1400s. They're all haunted, all of them.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, that's,
you can,
yeah,
come and do a pub crawl around all the haunted 1400s pubs, and you never know, you might spot a ghost on your way.
Absolutely, yeah. So Christina, we're gonna have to do like a podcast field trip. I know we've been talking about maybe York or something like that as well.
York as well. I want to do an episode in York. Maybe we should team up.
Oh, that would be super fun. Yeah, York
would be,
is beautiful.
All about that.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I do have friends who stayed at the haunted guest house that the people who own the House of Trembling Madness have, and they did say some strange stuff happened there. So
really,
yeah.
There are so many stories associated with York, and it's just such a beautiful place. I mean, I love it, and I really must get up there to do an episode and explore these ghosts a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful. Well, I think we'll begin to wrap up. And Christina, do you have any other questions? Or you can try to sort of telepathically, you know, get them to me if that would help.
No, I don't. I just thought this was really interesting and wonderful. And thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Joe. And yeah, any closing ghost stories, or feel free to plug your upcoming Halloween special. So
yeah, I mean, I'd just say, if you're into ghost stories, anything a bit unusual, unexplained, time slips, urban legends, mine's the channel for you.
There we go.
Yeah, the Ghost Trail series on YouTube. So yeah, I usually do Sundays at 5 p.m. But yeah, throughout October, Wednesdays and Sundays.
Oh, brilliant. Well, we'll leave it there then. So thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you again next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.